Council saying that we are proud to consider ourselves a sanctuary city and that we will continue to support the initiatives and the laws that we've put in place and will push back against any effort to take anything away from us.
Well, we want to thank you much for being with us. Melissa Mark Viverito is the Speaker of the New York City Council, the first Latina and the first woman, person of color to be the Speaker of the New York City Council. Jose Lopez Rivera, thanks so much for being with us from Chicago, the brother of Oscar Lopez Rivera. That does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Was produced by Mike Burke, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gavazdiner, Dina Guzder, Sam Alkoff, Ravi Karan, Hani Massoud, Sharina Nadura, and Andre Lewis, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Noguera, and Paul Huckabee, our engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Miriam Barnard, Hugh Grant, David Prude, Ariel Boone. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez, our website, democracynow.org. Happy holidays.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Happy to be with you today. It is December the 23rd, 2016, and this is the first WHFR Journal show of our 32nd year of broadcasting to you, the Dearborn and surrounding area. And this public affairs show has been on almost all that time, although we called it some different things in the early days, 32 years ago. But we take it as a particular responsibility to follow FCC rules and do public affairs shows, and we believe, on a weekly basis, and we believe it should be primetime hours when most people are awake, and we believe it should be podcast too, and cover issues that are not covered by the other commercial media. And we hope to also give you a little more in-depth analysis and background and history to give you a context for these stories that come up weekly here in this area. Also, there's going to be some opinions. And today, my name is Jay Koronek. It was yesterday too. Probably will be tomorrow. I'm the station advisor here at WHFR.FM. Station making waves. And so I may have some opinions, and we do that so that we stimulate your thinking, not to agree with us, but to search for verification. Okay? I might not be telling the truth. To the best of my ability, I am. Best of my knowledge, currently, but maybe not. So, all opinions expressed on this show, especially mine, are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford College, faculty, staff, administrators. And Henry Ford College does not tell us what to say or what to play, for that matter. We thank them very much for that creative independence, and we hope to continue to reward their trust in us. We are live in the studio today. A lot of programming in the Detroit area on commercial media is pre-recorded, so that people can take time off. But our loyal nonprofit station has a lot of great unpaid, sort of the definition of volunteers. And not myself, but I get a little part-time stipend from the college to be the station advisor. But we have more than 50 volunteers here at WHFR, and most of them are doing their shows. And thank you very much. Just continuing to give you special programming you can't get anywhere else on your dial, 89.3 FM, or from our website, WHFR.FM, or from one of those radio apps that you can get. We recommend the free version is all you need of TuneIn Radio. There it is. Yes, it's right on our website, whfr.fm. It tells you all about how to get that app. You just download TuneIn Radio. Plays on many different kinds of devices. It is a free app, at least one version is, and it's all you need. And you can easily just check out either local stations, and you'll see WHFR come up there on that app, or just type in WHFR, and it'll come up, and you can listen anytime you want. So any place you are. It's amazing, isn't it? Let's get started with local news and alternative views. I think the big story from the papers from this last week, and again, a lot of holiday news and events happening, and you probably already know about those, or maybe they're mostly over now. For example, the Festival of Trees closed, I think, last weekend, and maybe before that even. Most of those events, lighting the Christmas tree in Dearborn, are over. We did make an effort to try to schedule George Duraney today. We usually get him on the last broadcast before Christmas at the end of the legislative session. But this year, since he was term limited, and because just how the dates worked out, we're only one day ahead of, well, the 24th and 25th. And that's a time when family would get together. And so George was very busy until the last minute. And I think they were in session through the 15th anyway. And so he was very busy up there and saying goodbye to people, and also many other end of term after 6 years, three elected terms. We hope to have him on the show for his exit interview, or sometimes they call it a debriefing after a combat mission, and see how he survived the last 6 years and what great thoughts he has about his time in office and how difficult it is or how easy it is to be a state legislator as a Democrat in a Republican government. That's got to be challenging, and he's talked about that before, but we hope to have him for maybe the full hour, one of our Friday shows in January. And he's going to get back in touch with me after the holidays. So looking forward to that. What was announced, though, in the Dearborn Press and Guide Times Herald, and it was nice that they did a headline, top of the page, page one story about him, because he deserves, after 6 years of being in the legislature, again, as a Democrat in the Republican legislature, it is not easy. And yet he had some bills that did get passed that helped his people in his district, this district of Dearborn and a little bit of the surrounding area. It was also announced in this article, especially if you continue on page 8A towards the end. I always recommend if you have a newspaper and the story is at all interesting, keep reading until the end because things pop up. For example, George Duraney, of course, is helping the new representative from Dearborn, Abdullah Hamoud, and he took the oath of office. Let's see, I have that here. It's in the Arab American News. He took the oath, at least the story is from December 22nd, 1916. He took the oath of office, and of course he takes his position in January when they come back after the holiday break. I'm not sure what day that is. Certainly George has talked to him about the situation, the transition, of course. Maybe he'll be using the same office staff. Seemed to work for George okay. Maybe he'll be in the same office, probably. So George told him where the paper clips are kept, I bet, and the key to the restroom and so on. Maybe they have their own private restrooms in every office. We don't know about that. That's one of those questions we'll have to ask. And certainly after he gets some sort of adjustment made, we'll have Abdullah Hamoud on the show too. Maybe before summer, after he gets a couple months of experience in. If it matters, and I don't think it does, but Abdullah Hamoud took the oath of office with his hand not on a Bible, because he's Muslim, but on the Quran. No big deal. Okay, but George Duraney, at the end of the article, is already making plans for 2017, where he said he will run for a Dearborn city clerk at the local level. Aha. Well, we know that our current Dearborn City Clerk has already retired, Kathleen Buda, and it is Kathleen Buda, right? They have someone there temporarily, but that's an elected position. So in the next election, which from the way the article is written, it sounds like 2017, that would be November next year, there will be that election for Dearborn City Clerk. And of course, there may be other people running for it, but George Duraney has certainly has name recognition in the city after his years on the city council and also, of course, the last 6 years in the legislature. His quote about his decision to run for Dearborn City Clerk says, "It's a good fit for me because I want to make changes in the clerk's office. In Lansing, I've worked to making voting easier for residents and clerks. I believe that the people think I've done a good job during my 6 years as state representative." Okay, so we'll talk to him also about his decision to run as city clerk. What sort of background do you need for city clerk? How to run an administrative office? Business background? Well, George has been a small business person, so and certainly is nothing more important than voting. Just had another bit of information about from the Arab American News about the vote, presidential vote in Michigan. The official count is that Trump won by 10,704 votes. As we mentioned last week, though, 60% of Detroit's precinct could not be recounted because the number of votes total more than voters. And I really would like to know, who were those votes for? Of course, you don't know, because you have to do some comparison there between the names and who voted. And you have to do a lot of cross-checking. And of course, you're not supposed to know, it is private information, who you voted for. So I guess we won't know about that. But if 60% of the precincts could not be recounted in Detroit, then there's significant population here that easily could have changed things with only a 10,704 vote difference in the whole state of Michigan. Of course, you say, well, that's one vote. That's all it takes. And that's what I've said for years. In fact, I saw an article a couple weeks ago in Vermont. I don't know how I came across this, but Vermont's Independent Voice newspaper, okay. Anyway, after a second recount in one district, a person by the name of David Ainsworth, and he's a Republican, and the incumbent was Representative Sarah Buxton, Democrat, and Ainsworth won by one vote, 1,004 to 1,003. But they had to recount it twice. But in that district, it's always been close. 6 years ago, it was Buxton who defeated Ainsworth by just one vote. So we got an ongoing battle here between the same two people. I guess you wouldn't be too frustrated if you only lost by one vote, right? I mean, well, it was that close, so maybe next time. And in this case, next time worked for Mr. Ainsworth. I'm just saying, one vote can make all the difference. And anybody who didn't vote in that precinct, oh my gosh, they ought to feel very bad, especially if they would have voted for Buxton. By the way, there was a Buxton served 6 years in the House after defeating then incumbent Ainsworth, so he's going back office. So he was in office, and then she defeated him, and then she spent 6 years in the House. But she defeated him in 2010 by one vote. There was a recount that year, too. And in 2012, Buxton prevailed again over Ainsworth by 199 votes. In 2014, she won by 66 votes. Will there be a rematch in 2018? Buxton said she didn't know. It's going to take a little bit of processing, she said. Wow. Every vote matters, and every vote should be counted. Maybe a couple times. just to make sure, right? Because they say, in terms of Michigan here, it's just they think it wasn't a computer error or anybody in particular or any country in particular hacking the results, but they believe it was human error. Okay. So anyway, we hope look forward to having George Durrani, our past representative to state legislature in Michigan, on the show on Friday in January. Let's see here. What haven't I covered from... Oh, I have covered that story. Okay. Lame duck session did end in Lansing, and of course there was a lot of bills that were passed, and some we still don't know about exactly. There was a report from... Excuse me. Should turn off the microphone before I cough into it. Michigan Public Radio, michiganradio.org, reported on the 15th of this month that CPR training may soon be a graduation requirement in Michigan. We think that passed. So we might get CPR training, but do we have sex ed? Which is the more important if you had to choose between the two? Because I don't think we have required sex ed at any level in Michigan. But CPR training, yes, let's go beat those chests and do mouth to mouth. Sounds like fun to me. Bad joke. That you actually use, we teach it here as part of our... courses in, I think, nursing as well as various sort of life-saving courses we have for fire professionals and so on. I know that they have actual dummies, that is dummy head and chest models that you can slap them on the chest all you want to and they won't complain, and then you practice breathing into their mouth while you hold their nose, or their fake nose anyway. So it certainly is there's a procedure. We've done these classes for years, but just wonder who's going to pay for the CPR dummies if you're going to train everybody or every senior. Some big schools, that's a lot of dummies. Is that a big joke there? I don't know. You figure. Oh, other little stories. Let's stick with the lame duck session, okay? In Lansing. The American Federation of Teachers, which does represent the teachers here in Dearborn, both K-12, and also we have a local at the college level, and actually two locals at college level, one for the full-time teachers and one for the part-time teachers, called the adjunct faculty, and which I'm a member of right now, full disclosure. Anyway, they report that of course, the lame duck session has been gone, but a few of the things they did over the last several weeks showed they intend to pursue in the next 2 years. So they issue five things here. They tried to strip police and firefighters of retirement health care. Okay, how do you feel about that? They did push to privatize and cut even more from teacher retirement benefits. They gutted unemployment insurance funds to pay for more corporate tax cuts. Point number four, they threatened to pass strict voter ID laws to make it, in effect, harder to vote. And five, they failed to extend transparency laws, that is, transparency in government, allowing the public, everyone, to know what's happening in the governor's office and the legislature. They didn't pass that. So there's no transparency required. Yep. Okay. The Sierra Club, though, which is sierraclub.org, there is a Michigan chapter of the Sierra Club that you might want to sign up for emails from. Again, in full disclosure, I am a member of the Michigan chapter of the Sierra Club, and I give them a little contribution every year. Actually, I've changed that to monthly now. If you do support a nonprofit that you love, don't wait and see if you have a big hunk of change at the end of the year, maybe a monthly contribution is easier for you. First of all, like being charged to a credit card or coming directly out of a checking account. And it really helps the nonprofit because they don't have to, they don't have a problem budgeting so much. They know what their secure monthly sustainable amount is going to be, and that allows them to plan ahead. Sometimes that's more valuable than, let's say, getting a surprise check at the end of the year when you're already suffering for several months. And if you knew that was coming in, you'd be saving more dogs and cats or whatever your nonprofit does that's good for the community. So you might consider that in terms of a year-end contribution. It's true, it wouldn't start until maybe next month if it goes to a credit card or comes out of your account. But the nonprofit would really thank you so much because it helps them with their budgeting. Unfortunately, for WHFR.FM, we are part of Henry Ford College, but you can donate just to us, and it goes just into our development fund, and it stays there every year. We try to have a little bit of a, as they call it, a rainy day amount. But we haven't come up with a way for outsiders, that is people outside the on-campus staff and faculty, to do monthly sustaining donations. Like to do that, asked to do that, but hasn't been made available yet to us. Maybe we'll catch up some year. But I am recommending that for, you know, as a consideration. If you can't do a big chunk to help, I don't know, for the animals in Metro Detroit, okay, the Friends of the Animals in Metro Detroit, the new Friends of Metro Detroit Animals, the new name for the Dearborn Animal Shelter, they still need about $1 million, even though they're going to start building their shelter next year, their new shelter facilities. They need that support, and a monthly sustainer pledge of any amount is especially good. Believe me, as a station advisor, I know about budgeting, and if you don't have much money, to know that so much money is solid coming in every month, it really helps the budget, really helps the planning, and you can be much more effective. So Lame Duck Miracle, Sierra Club says, clean energy wins in Lansing. After more than 4 years of work by volunteers and staff across Michigan, a new energy law that increases electric utility renewable energy requirements, retains and improves energy efficiency provisions, and protects net metering for renewable energy producers will be signed into law by Governor Snyder in the next few weeks. Sierra Club, joined with a broad coalition of religious, environmental, political, and business organizations over the past two legislative sessions around promoting a strong clean energy agenda, and were able to win most of our shared agenda in the final hours of the lame duck session of the legislature. And let me just go off from their statement and just emphasize that, you know, clean energy, clean environment, sustainable energy is clean energy too, folks. Or not necessarily, but it's also what's being talked about here. That's good for everybody. The religious organizations, the environmental organizations, of course, believe it's good. But political organizations, business organizations can see the value of that. To not be oil dependent as a country, the United States of America, to not be dependent on foreign producers of oil, or any oil at all, would be so good for this country. So these are all appropriate goals. How it passed in the Republican legislature, I don't know, but the argument is so good, so logical, that who could doubt it? Also, the cost of wind and solar energy is about one-third now, one-third the cost of energy gotten from oil and coal. How much it costs to produce the same amount of electricity. It's two times more expensive to do it with oil or coal. So why wouldn't the largest energy companies in Michigan want to go that route? Well, they're a little worried because they also know that individuals can get their own solar panels or solar tiles replacing your roof, by the way. Tesla has a subsidiary that they just bought as part of the Tesla company. It was called Solar City. Now it's, a subdivision of Tesla, but they make tiles that look like regular roof regular roofing. There was a company in Michigan that had this idea too and was in production of that. Maybe they still are. But the new tiles and the new panels are so efficient that it's going to save everybody a lot of money. And so certainly the big companies would rather continue making their profits by selling you expensive electricity. And so it's going to take the legislature, regulation, to force them to go the right way and even to encourage people to do it on their own for their own homes, if that's at all possible. So Mike Berkowitz, Sierra Club's legislative director, says we started this session 2 years ago with a proposal that would have gutted all three of these programs. In other words, that was the legislative proposal, the Republicans' proposal. And over the past 2 years, worked relentlessly to get the proposal improved. Hundreds of Sierra Club volunteers from throughout Michigan met with legislators, wrote letters to the editor, and advocated for strong, clean energy. And they do say, though, that this was by no means a perfect proposal, what got passed. Michigan will still have a cap on net metering. A grid tariff could be levied to net metering customers in the future. And waste incineration will continue to count as a renewable energy source. However, clean energy advocates overcame overwhelming opposition from utilities and other powerful groups to keep moving forward on Michigan's path toward a less fossil fuel-dependent future. They have a few more items here about what did pass, and we want to update you on that because, well, it's going to be law, folks, and it's going to be a new year, and so it's going to be a new problem for all of us. Here's a couple of public service announcements. Well, one is what they call a promotional announcement, a WHFR, and then we have an announcement about next semester here at Henry Ford College. We'll be back with the wrap-up of the lame duck session information right after.
Oh, the diva. Well, she's on the good list. The Gothabilly man. Well, he's on the good list, too. Jay Kornick. Well.
Hey, Santa.
Hello, Ella Bester.
Me and the guys got you an early gift, you know, for your big trip this year.
Oh, really?
Yeah, here it is. It's a phone. With the internet, so you can listen to WHFR's winter season celebration shows.
Oh, that sounds exciting, Alabaster.
Oh, it is, Santa. It's where WHFR's on-air personalities host one-hour pre-recorded shows with all the holiday trimmings. It's always a blast.
Well, you know, I'm really busy this time of year. When do I need to tune in?
Oh, that's the best part, Santa. The shows start December 24th and run consecutively through December 25th. Last year, I listened to all the shows, 10 times over, straight through. I was a little tired at the end.
Ho, ho, ho. Take it easy, Alabaster. Where do I tune into these holiday shows?
Oh, that's easy, Santa. Tune in to 89.3 on the FM dial, or you can go on the internet at whfr.fm.
Alabaster, you and the gang have really outdone yourself this year. I can't wait to listen to WHFR's winter season celebration shows, the 24th and the 25th of December. This will make my trip even more special this year.
The winter season celebration shows, a long-running tradition bringing you joy through the holidays. December 24th and 25th, from the station making waves, WHFR Dearborn. Santa, does this mean I can have your milk and cookies?
No, Alabaster. The cookies are for me.
Well, it's wintertime here in our little mitten state, and you know what that means. It's time to get signed up for winter classes here at Henry Ford College. With top-shelf instructors and one of the lowest tuition rates in the state, Henry Ford College has been the benchmark for affordable, high-quality learning since 1938. HFC's winter semester starts January 9th, and online registration is going on right now. Visit hfcc.edu and see over 120 associate degree, career, and university transfer programs to choose from. HFC also has tuition and financial options available. So let's hit this info one more time. Online registration going on right now at hfcc.edu for the winter semester classes that begin January 9th. January 9th. You've got a little time, but deadlines are closing in. So let's open up the door to your future with winter classes right here at the future-driven Henry Ford College.
This is the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. Jay Kornick here with you. Yeah, Santa Claus may not judge me favorably this year, but that's okay. I've been good before. That should count for this year. Can I carry it over from year to year? Well, I don't know. Okay. Back to the lame duck session in Lansing. Today is December 23rd. Yes, 2 days before Christmas. We'll do some Christmas things for you right before the end of the hour for those that are celebrating. Also, tomorrow begins, I think it's at sunset, Hanukkah celebration. So to our Jewish friends, in advance slightly, happy Hanukkah. Okay. So these are bills headed to Governor Snyder's desk, according to the Sierra Club. See, if you remember the Sierra Club, they can give you the Lansing updates. They do this big email once a month, and they're almost as good as the newspapers. Well, better than the local newspapers. I'm sorry. Shame on them. But they have no reporters. You're not subscribing. You're not reading the papers, so they have no money to pay for reporters. Anyway, Sierra Club says, head her to Governor Snyder's desk, bag the bags. This bill preempts local units of government from enacting any regulations or fees on single-use containers, specifically plastic shopping bags. The Sierra Club urges Governor Snyder to veto this legislation, which blocks counties, cities, and townships from taking steps to stop pollution from plastic bags and protect recycling equipment, which is damaged when plastic bags are mixed in. So we'll see if he signs that or not. I haven't heard. Wolves in the Target again. Michigan did pass, and I did get a story on that. Where is it from? MichiganRadio.org, that as of yesterday, he did sign a wolf hunting bill for Michigan. It is the third bill passed by the legislature. Two previous ones were upset by public votes of the whole state of Michigan. The public in Michigan that votes said twice, we don't want you to go after wolves. There's not many of them. And still, Senator Tom Casperson has a continuing crusade in the legislature to authorize wolf hunting. Following a court decision nullifying previous legislation, which overturned the vote of the people blocking a wolf hunt, the legislator has once again passed a bill to allow wolf hunting. Of course, Sierra Club said, don't allow it. And Snyder signed it anyway. It really didn't matter. He probably knew it didn't matter. So he was trying to do something nice for his Republican senator friend. Except he's such a lame duck in many ways. I mean, literally. Snyder cannot run again. He's term limited, too. And many people say thank you very much. But anyway, however you feel about that, the federal government, though, did move in the last couple of weeks before this bill got even passed and made wolves an endangered species in the whole United States of America. Okay? So, even though this bill was signed by Governor Snyder, nobody can hunt wolves in Michigan by federal regulation. Ha ha ha. So, sorry, Senator Tom Casperson. And if you know anything about wolves, folks, and that's Sierra Club, you know, they know about animals, they know about nature, okay, because that's what they're into. And they do research, and it's a matter of science, okay, real hard facts. And maybe the senator, if he lives up north in some big sprawling farm, doesn't want to see a wolf on his property because he thinks they're dangerous. They are not dangerous, except when they're endangered themselves, when they're cornered, when they're trying to protect their young. when they're starving to death, perhaps, but they're not going to starve to death. There's so few of them right now, okay, unless the winter's really bad. So there's no reason, even though Senator Tom thinks there is, and all of his Republican friends, well, let's support Tom because he's a good guy, whatever. I have no idea whether they think he's good or not, but he gets his bills passed. But you can't kill wolves in Michigan, all right? Sorry, hunters. If you're just itching with your trigger finger to start shooting at living creatures. Okay, I'm a pacifist anyway. I don't like shooting living creatures from wolves up to humans, okay? Even bigger than humans. I mean, just, it's crazy, okay? Yeah, for our survival, I understand. There's, you know, I think we're a little past that, though. No. Okay, what else here? To get the lead out, that bill in legislature would respond to the devastating failure of Michigan state officials around the Flint water crisis to notify families and communities that their drinking water contained unsafe levels of lead. The legislation requires officials to provide notice in 3 days' time about the lead levels in water. And we'll see if Governor Snyder signs that one. We don't know. Okay. I think that's all we wanted to cover on the lame duck. There may be other things slipping through that we'll find out about later. Okay. I got these little, I'll just give you little headlines from the Dearborn Press and Guide because my computer wasn't working this morning at home. Couldn't print these things out. But from pressandguide.com, from a Wednesday, Michigan Attorney General Bill Schulte, he files order against Dearborn-based fundraiser for illegal donation bins. So there've been bins setting out saying, you know, give here, drop off stuff here for the needy or something like that. And a lot of violations this person has got. Must have a lot of bins around, but it's a Dearborn-based company. And I personally recommend that the way around this problem, if you don't think these people are legitimate, I mean, go to the big people. Go to the Salvation Army if you have to donate your unused items that are still good and can help other people. Or, of course, Goodwill. But don't just drop things in bins around town. There may be some funny things going on. Of course, Schulte also did, and it's reported on several. Well, it's mainly in the Metro Times this week. There's like, well, on the MetroTimes.com website, there's three stories that have covered Schulte and how he's going to prosecute two former emergency city managers for the state of Flint that were appointed by the governor that... did things illegally, I would say immorally and unethically too, in terms of Flint water supply. Interestingly, Governor Snyder did not get any sort of conviction. They're still going through a number of 10,000 emails or whatever to find out what he knew when he knew it. Jack Lessenberry has a podcast about that, and we're going to play it right now, so take a listen.
I'm Jack Lessenberry. When I learned yesterday morning that Michigan Attorney General Bill Schulte had charged two Flint former emergency managers in connection with the water crisis, what popped first into my head was an image long ago of a young senator from Tennessee. What did the president know and when did he know it? Howard Baker had asked on national television more than 43 years ago when Rick Snyder was in high school. The country tore itself apart over the next 14 months over this, and we all know how Watergate turned out. There's no indication, yet anyway, that Schulte intends to go after the governor, not even as an unindicted co-conspirator, as Richard Nixon was once famously called. But we still don't know for sure what the governor knew and when he knew it, despite all those emails which were released, perhaps selectively released, by his administration. In addition to the two former emergency managers, Darnell Early and Jerry Ambrose, charges were filed against Flint's former utilities administrator, Doherty Johnson, and the city's public works director, Howard Croft. All are charged with serious felonies, including conspiracy to commit false pretenses that could mean 20-year prison sentences. All the defendants arraigned so far have pleaded not guilty, and it's important to stress that legally they indeed are not guilty, unless and until they're convicted. We also don't know when the next shoe will drop, nor whose it will be. The Attorney General said of his investigation that we're closer to the end than to the beginning. But his lead investigator, Andrew Arena, also said that there are some more people out there who know they've done wrong and know we're coming after them. I've never been a particular fan of this Attorney General who spent millions of taxpayer dollars grandstanding and losing cases over social issues. But he seems to have followed a classic strategy here of working from the outside in, building his case slowly and methodically. When anyone asked who might be charged next, I have to wonder about four people. There's Nick Lyons, Snyder's Secretary of Health and Human Services, who's already been identified as a target. There's former Speaker of the House Andy Dillon, a Democrat who was appointed first state treasurer and then as a highly paid special advisor to the treasurer during the run-up to the switch to the Flint River water. There's Ed Kurtz, another in the parade of Flint emergency managers. Kurtz was the one who actually made the disastrous decision to switch to the poisonous Flint River, and I was a bit surprised he was not charged as well. Finally, there's Dan Wyant, who was fired as head of the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality after evidence surfaced of a systematic cover-up in efforts to mislead the press and public about water contamination. There are those who are automatically suspicious of anything Bill Schuette does. He's a nakedly ambitious politician who wants to be governor and knows he has to do everything he can to separate himself from the administration of his fellow Republican. But, though he is slow to get started, I can find little to quarrel with in the Flint indictment so far. Now, we'll just have to see what happens next.
Jack Lesson.
Yeah, so we thank Michigan Public Radio for allowing anyone to actually download that podcast and listen to it. So we're presenting it to you and also recommend Michigan Public Radio as another nonprofit that for your consideration this holiday season. I get a lot of my information about what's happening in Lansing from Michigan Public Radio, which is not all presented on WDET, although they are a great resource. Yes, I'm a supporter, a monthly sustainer of WDET also. I said, well, don't you give any money to WHFR? Yes, I do. I do, too. Okay. I mean, I try to spread the lack of wealth around. That's what I do. Also looking at other top stories here. This is sort of a puzzler thing. In the Press and Guide from this last Wednesday, their story says 100 airmen in Michigan National Guard are leaving Selfridge for Southwest Asia for a couple months, apparently. They're going to be on duty there, part of Operation Freedom's Sentinel. They're an air refueling team. Big plane, carries fuel to refuel fighters, whatever, in Southwest Asia. Yeah, I'm not sure about what countries. Isn't that Vietnam, maybe, Southwest Asia? Or what about all those islands that the Chinese government, big Chinese communist government, has built in the ocean? And I think it's somewhere near, of course, Taiwan, which they claim is still partly theirs. But Taiwan says, no, we're independent. And the U.S. sort of agrees with that. So I'm just wondering if the U.S. wants to keep a military presence in that area. And I wonder why. But they've got to turn to civilian troops. Turns out that the Selfridge Air Force team has been employed all kinds of places for the last couple of years around the world. And we know very well that when ground troops had to go into Iraq, oh, yeah, just because you joined the Michigan National Guard doesn't mean you're going to stay in Michigan. Is that right? What do you think? Well, whatever is needed to keep the world safe. Yeah, prove it, I say. Sorry, skeptic here. I disagree with the current president of the United States of America, who believes we need a military presence in the entire world. 200-plus military bases and all these extra excursions all the time. I totally disagree with that. I happen to agree with the former senator, former representative, Ron Paul. On that. Does that make me a libertarian? Who has great detailed evidence, read some of his books over the holidays, Ron Paul, about how we don't need that military presence worldwide and the billions of dollars. And, of course, the news today, I hate to do national stuff, but it seems that President Trump is at least totally in favor of President Obama's trillion-dollar plan to increase and improve all of our nuclear weapons. Okay, it's $1 trillion over 30 years, but still. Trump was doing a little tweet taunting. He was taunting via tweets. Who? Russia. That's right. Big time Russia. Ooh, we'll match you every bomb you got with our bombs or whatever he said. You know, I hate to do national stuff, but see, it comes back locally if they're going to start sending Michigan National Guard all over the world and have been for the last several years. Decades. Excuse me, we've been in Afghanistan for 12 years now, the longest war the United States has ever been in. Will it go on forever? Sure, why not? I mean, we're having a lot of fun. Doesn't make any difference over there, apparently. We're not looking at a win in a day or two, or a year or two, that's for sure. Oh, my goodness. Oh, also, from this last Wednesday, pressandguide.com, Wayne County Prosecutor Kim Worthy has issued a statement that, and you probably saw this in the major media, no charges will be brought against Dearborn Police in two fatal shootings from about a year ago, December and last January. And you might say, well, there you go again. Black Lives Matter, but court system doesn't seem to, judicial system doesn't seem to agree. Well, again, everybody's life matters, of course, and you have to look at every situation with all the facts. And when all the facts are put together, is there guilt or not? If there is enough to charge, they would be brought to a court, and then they would find out whether or not they're innocent or guilty. But if there's not even enough evidence to bring charges against someone, to arrest someone, then there wasn't that much evidence, but there wasn't. These big-time investigations went on for about a year by one, I can't remember which one, but the Detroit Police Department did one investigation, and the state, Michigan State Police did the other one. So just so you know, no charges will be brought against Dearborn Police in those two fatal shootings. And, of course, any person's death is unfortunate, but apparently it wasn't their fault, and it wasn't even close enough to go to trial. Okay, let's see here. MetroTimes.com this week, and we didn't get a delivery of the paper on campus here because it was final exam week. Well, it ended pretty much with our teacher grades going in this last Monday, so there really weren't any students around after last week, so they didn't drop a copy off. But I did see online, MetroTimes.com, that there's three articles about saving Michigan's groundwater. Seems that Nestle, we've mentioned them before, with their Ice Mountain water. You see that in the stores, Ice Mountain. Where does it come from? It comes from Michigan. Somewhere northwest area of the state. Is it around Grand Rapids or somewhere? And now they want to take more water out of the ground, which they get for free, I believe, or almost nothing. Would you, if you live in that area, do you want your groundwater to be pumped out for private profit? What is Nestle giving back to the state of Michigan? I mean, once you take our resources, what are we left with? Nothing. It's a big company, but certainly as a minor protest, I won't buy Ice Mountain water. In fact, I don't buy water typically. I use tap water and I purify it myself in my house, filter it and so on. Still cheaper than buying the water, by the way. Read MetroTimes.com. Read their stories every week. You say, you know, because I've said before, you can pick up the paper for free several different places. Maybe you're too lazy or busy or you don't go to those stores. Okay, you don't need the paper. Just get online. And maybe you want to go online at our library. Good story for next year. First of all, Dearborn Public Libraries are celebrating, I think, their 50th year at the main library anyway. Big celebration for that. I think it's over, but nonetheless, you know, it seems crazy to me. You're not celebrating 50 years. Was there ever anything in doubt? I think it's amazing that a building that was there 50 years ago is still standing. So I guess you could celebrate that. I guess it was made fairly decently, but there have been repairs, I know. But beginning in January, there are going to be more hours. They're notably adding Saturday hours at all locations of the current Dearborn Public Library branches, and nothing is scheduled to be further closed. So the Henry Ford Centennial Library on Michigan there, Midtown, Dearborn, will be open from 9:30 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. Monday through Thursday, and Friday and Saturday from 9:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. year-round. So just Friday and Saturday that they close at 5:30. That'll be year-round, including the summer. And Sundays after the school year is out, so it's September through, or during the school years when students might want to do research, or just hang out and read books and magazines. Wow, what a concept, for free, 1 to 5. So September through May, the main library, as we call it, the big one, will be open from 1 to 5. Bryant and Esper branch will be open Monday and Tuesday from 11 to 7, and Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday from 11 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. So I guess nobody gets up early to go to Bryant or Esper. But Bryant and Esper will be closed on Fridays and Sundays. Okay? But anyway, you know, of course there'll be closures for from today through Monday, and also December 30th through January 2nd because of the Christmas and New Year holidays. But congratulations to the city and to the library for figuring out how to get more hours, and Sunday hours too. And make use of those, folks. I just mentioned MetroTimes.com. There are computers in the library you can use to get access. Also, there are Wi-Fi hotspots. Okay, so you can take your Wi-Fi tablets or your Wi-Fi smartphones or whatever, and you know, just look stuff up, find out things that way. Go to our libraries, use them. They're a tremendous resource for free. In fact, especially I'm sorry I have to say this. Magazines. There's so many magazines that are published right now, and most people don't even know that there are magazines. Because how many stores sell magazines? A couple at your drug stores and at grocery stores, very small racks. I mean, what, they got 30, 40 titles, all very predictable, I think. And only at Barnes & Noble in this area, down in Allen Park, do they have a lot of magazines. Of course, they pack them so tightly together in their four racks, front and back, that you can only see about 1 inch of the spine of the edge peeking out of each magazine. So unless it's on the top of those, you know, displays, you don't know what the others are. So you have to, and must be 1,000 or more titles. The most fantastic array of information that's updated every week or monthly, depending on the frequency of the magazine, right there. But I've complained for years to Barnes & Noble, but they don't care, I guess, that they need a lot more racks. Because if they're going to carry all those magazines, if people could just see what they have, maybe they'd buy more magazines. But of course, at the library, the Centennial, they already subscribe to hundreds and hundreds of magazines. And you can just take them off the rack, read them, put them back. You don't have to buy them if you don't want to. So, fantastic deal. Oh, my goodness. My colleague John Conroy is coming in here right at the end of the show. Other news in Dearborn, and then we'll turn to our Christmas news, is that Ford Motor Company is going to redevelop four blocks of West Dearborn. And we read about this a couple of places. Actually, it's very interesting because they kept talking, especially in the City of Dearborn email, about the landmark Wagner Place, the hotel in West Dearborn, Michigan Avenue, and about how Ford is going to put in about $60 million to develop this area. And I kept thinking, I never heard of Wagner Place. I've only lived here since 1979. Where the heck is that? I don't know still, but it looks like from another story that was in one of the papers here. Let's see. Yes, it was in pressandguide.com that the former Kernan Steakhouse is being torn down as part of this. So it's the Kernan's block there. And you might say, well, Ford is what, doing $1 billion or $2 billion worth of redevelopment on their land? Why are they buying this location right on Michigan Avenue? To keep the Ford name on a billboard or something right in front of people's faces as they're driving down the street? I don't know. Can't figure it out. $60 million, and they're redeveloping what they call four blocks of West Dearborn. And I guess they just weren't selling any of the, I think it was supposed to be Middle Eastern Steakhouse or something. It was bought by someone. They tried to open it. I don't even know if it was open. Unfortunately, I didn't go there, and that's why it closed probably, right? Just because Kornick didn't go there. So that seems strange to me that they're buying these other facilities because they don't have enough space on their $2 billion campus. Boy, that's going to be a lot of stuff. Well, let's say hello, and I'm sure that he's brought some festivities with him. In fact, he's wearing a hat, and he brought the latest Metro Times. Almost too late now, John, but Merry Christmas to you. Best of holidays.
Well, thank you, Jay. Merry Christmas to you and all your listeners, our listeners.
Okay, I should describe John because he is wearing his Santa Claus hat, which says Las Vegas on the front of it. So Las Vegas Santa Claus, is that where you got it from?
This is a special gift from my daughter who lives in Las Vegas.
Okay. All right. So you can never forget Las Vegas, even though you're supposed to leave everything in Las Vegas.
Yes.
In Las Vegas. But he brought the hat with him anyway. So, well, happy holidays to you, sir.
And yes, you as well, Jay.
Yeah. Anything else you wanted to mention since you made the trip in today?
I just want to make sure that RED gets put out there. Remember everyone deployed. We all understand the atrocities of war, et cetera, but we always want to support the men and women that are over there as well as the veterans that are here back in the United States. So on Fridays especially, wear red to remember everyone deployed.
Okay.
And, of course, a wonderful holiday season to you, all of our listeners, and to those that I work with so closely here at WHFR.
Well, thank you for the word. Thank you for making the trip in. And I'm glad you made the trip back safely and so on. You were just there in Las Vegas?
No,
you got the hat. You got the hat at least. Hat, right. So you're wearing the hat thinking about your daughter too. That's great.
One little quick sports note. The Hawks finished up their this past week with a loss this Wednesday. We have one more game this year, next Thursday at 6 o'clock at Henry Ford Athletic Building. And go Hawks. On a slightly related note, the Eastern Michigan is playing a football game called the Bahamas Bowl against Old Dominion right now in the first half. Very close game.
And I know you would want me to mention, too, that there is still one more jazz event.
Nope, there is not.
Oh. Was that canceled? Kate Patterson?
It was canceled.
Okay. There
was
a Always mentioned Top Dog Jazz Fridays, but she was canceled. Oh, well.
There was a death in Joe's family, so Top Dog is down for the rest of this week.
Yep. Well, again, free entertainment there, folks. And yes, you probably might want to consider buying something there, but Joe's Top Dog back in January, I trust. Two stories, and then I'm going to close with a sort of Santa Claus type thing. First of all, John and I were both upset and very concerned about 6 months ago, was it? That on Grosse Isle, lacrosse players, young people in high school, I think, who play the game of lacrosse, just happens they were in that team, they pled guilty to animal torture and they'll be sentenced in January. That's down in Grosse Isle Township. To former Grosse Isle High School lacrosse players who pleaded guilty to, and I don't know if they were formerly in high school and graduated, or they gave up lacrosse. Maybe they're kicked off the team before this.
Well, they're still in high school, but they're not playing lacrosse anymore.
I just want to say that the animal killing and torture that they did, it was two charges, killing and torturing of animals and conspiracy to commit killing and torturing of animals. Both charges are felonies. That's serious, big-time crimes, folks, and carry a maximum of 4 years in prison. They were supposed to be sentenced December 15th, but the sentencing was adjourned. I wonder if they wanted to give them Christmas at home or something before they did their hard time. But we'll give you a report in January, just because we want people to know, whether it's young people or older people, that torturing animals is against the law. Not a nice thing to do. Torturing other human beings is not nice either. You shouldn't do that, and that's against the law. But still, come on, these are defenseless animals. And what were the animals? Horses? Little?
A guinea pig.
Guinea pigs.
Yep.
Oh, jeez. And they're so, basically, guinea pigs are so shy and so lovable, I think, just because they're usually very, very humble and they hide a lot, especially if they're in a cage in your house and there's nothing else to do. They don't do well indoors, but this was a public park facility or something.
Down by the waterfront, Gros Seals Sunrise Park. Yep.
Okay. All right. Just going to conclude right now because Highway 61 is coming right up. This is WHFR Dearborn. Finally, this is what, back in 1987, an editorial from the New York Sun responded to an 8-year-old Virginia O'Hanlon when she wrote to the editor asking, please tell me the truth. Is there a Santa Claus? Virginia, your little friends are wrong. They've been affected by the skepticism of a skeptical age. They do not believe, except they see. They think that nothing can be which is not comprehensible by their little minds. All minds, Virginia, whether they be men's or children's, are little. In this great universe of ours, man is a mere insect, an ant in his intellect, as compared with the boundless world about him, as measured by the intelligence capable of grasping the whole of truth and knowledge. Yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus. He exists as certainly as love and generosity and devotion exist, and you know that they give, and you know that they abound to give you your life, its highest beauty and joy. Alas, how dreary would be the world if there were no Santa Claus. It would be as dreary as if there were no Virginias. There would be no childlike faith then, no poetry, no romance to make tolerable this existence. We should have no enjoyment except in sense and sight. The eternal light with which childhood fills the world would be extinguished. Not believe in Santa Claus? You might as well not believe in fairies. You might get your papa to hire men to watch in all the chimneys on Christmas Eve to catch Santa Claus, but even if they did not see Santa Claus coming down, what would that prove? Nobody sees Santa Claus, but that is no sign there is no Santa Claus. The most real things in the world are those that neither children nor men can see. Did you ever see fairies dancing on the lawn? Of course not, but that's no proof they are not there. Nobody can conceive or imagine all the wonders there are unseen and unseeable in the world. You may tear apart the baby's rattle and see what makes the noise inside, but there is a veil covering the unseen world which not the strongest man nor even the united strength of all the strongest men that ever lived could tear apart. Only faith, fancy, poetry, love, romance can push aside that curtain and view and picture the supernal beauty and glory beyond. Ah, is it all real? Virginia, in all this world, there's nothing else real and abiding. No Santa Claus? Thank God he lives, and he lives forever. 1,000 years from now, Virginia, nay, 10 times 10,000 years from now, he will continue.